Good morning. This is Sunday, July 6th, and we are studying Consciousness Transformed, the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks. And we are on September 21st of 1963. The adjustment must be made within your consciousness and a lesson in secrecy. He's going to cover the two-pronged approach to spiritual healing. He's going to give you a lot of work, but if you want this transformation of consciousness, you have to pass through this work. And I have had people tell me point blank, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. And I don't say much of anything. I just kind of look. But I know within myself, this path that was laid out for us, called the Infinite Way, Principles of the Infinite Way. This path includes this work, and there's no way around it. You have to go through it. You say, well, that's a lot of mental activity, and I thought we were supposed to be overcoming that. Yes. This is the only path, or one of the few paths, that uses the mental activity to overcome the mental activity. It uses the mind to overcome the mind. It uses thought to stop using thought. So let's get into the chapter, shall we? I would like to speak today, he says, about healing work. The very minute you become aware of discords and inharmonies in any form, you begin to reach out for the healing ministry. Yes, because you want to know, what do I do about this? You may not know how yet, but you are alerted, and from then on you will become aware of discords in the form of sin, disease, lacks, inequalities, injustices, and these will annoy you, because you know something can be done. But you're not sure what yet. And so the question arises, do I know enough to be able to help in this situation? He says, I am speaking only to those students who have had the experience of witnessing error and discord in the world and then being puzzled about what to do about it. That is the beginning of your spiritual awakening. He tells us elsewhere that unless you practice this two-pronged approach, you will not come into the fullness of your Christhood. You will be only on the fringes of demonstration. I don't want that. I want the whole thing. So he says here, until that's the beginning of the spiritual awakening. Until then, no matter how much a person is seeking truth, there is no spiritual awakening because the individual is only seeking a solution to his own problems. From the moment that a student becomes concerned about what he sees on the street, at that moment, the real spiritual progress begins. You see that? We have said all through this study, and for a couple of years now, that you must not try to add companionship or supply or health to yourself. That these are the added things. And only when these things are no longer important to you can you come into the new horizon, the new consciousness. And he's repeating that here. Only when you are no longer seeking a solution to your own problems, your individual problems, but trying to find out how do these principles work, how do I practice these principles, how do I attain this new consciousness? Well, from that moment, you are beginning to have real spiritual progress. Remember, you are not to do anything outwardly about these problems that you see in others or in the world. But you have to do something silently within your own consciousness. Within yourself, if you were looking at a blackboard and you saw 2 times 2 equals 5, I don't think you'd walk into the classroom and change it, but I know within yourself you'd say, wait a minute, that's 4. It should be 4. And he says here, within yourself, you would correct the mathematical error. Well, in the same way, you are called upon to correct appearances. You have absolutely no right to do this openly. He's going to give you a practice that you must do, you must work on and with within your consciousness. And so you're called upon to correct the appearance. Well, how do you correct the appearance? How do you correct the appearance? When you see sin, disease, death, lack, limitation, what is it that you're supposed to do within? He says on the next page, you are under a spiritual obligation to make the correction within yourself. And if those you are looking at are at all receptive, they may experience a healing, and very often do. Spiritually, you may not pass by on the other side of the road. As an infinite way student, you cannot possibly fulfill yourself until what you are taking in is released. So I have no right to do anything openly, but I must practice something within myself which corrects the error or corrects the appearance. I must translate the appearance, he says elsewhere. Well, we'll get back to that in a minute. He says, truth taken in and not expressed and released goes to seed and rots. Every single principle of truth that you learn must immediately be put into practice and into expression. Every student, no matter how much a beginning student they may be, must find some way within themselves to express every statement of truth that they learn. No infinite way student walking on the street and beholding bad conduct or anything of an erroneous nature is permitted to pass by on the other side. He must, there are a lot of musts in here. If you just kind of underline the must, you would see a handful for sure in these next few pages. And he means it. And so you cannot pass by on the other side. He must look right at the situation or the condition and then immediately give the spiritual prayer or treatment within himself. Whatever the spiritual student witnesses of a negative nature must be retranslated within his own consciousness. That which we have heretofore called knowing the truth or giving a treatment. You cannot pass by on the other side. In that direction lies barrenness. Okay, so there is the principle. Once you understand, even intellectually, that there is one power, and that power is God, and the error that you behold with the senses is not power, has no law, no substance, no presence, really, no spiritual presence. once you understand that, you must, when you behold these things, give a treatment within yourself, because if you don't practice these principles, you will become barren. And so there's no use writing Bill Skiles and saying, "What? I can't understand what's wrong. I have no supply. I have no companion. I have no health. I've been studying for so long." Have you? Really? If you've been studying for so long, why are you still seeking for yourself? Only. How come you haven't been meeting these problems when you behold them on the street or in the news? Because he says if you don't practice this second part of the two-pronged approach to spiritual healing, you will become barren. Well, you said that you were ready to take the step. You were an advancing student. An advancing student is no longer looking for solutions to their individual problems. Oh, sure, seldom. Once in a while, rarely, yes. But for the most part, they're busy practicing these principles. They are living these principles out here in the world. They are the living Christ. And the Christ is looking at these principles and translating them. In the beginning, with mental activity. Later, with just a smile. This is how you develop the healing consciousness. And if you don't, you will be barren. So just count on it. You cannot pass by on the other side. In that direction lies barrenness. Whenever you perceive anything which is spiritually incorrect, the adjustment must be made within your consciousness. Retranslate the appearance. He still hasn't told us what exactly we must know. He's assuming that you're an advanced student and you already understand what you must know. We call this giving a treatment, or knowing the truth, but it is a great deal more than that. It is really beholding the universe as it is. And it is by means of this practice that an individual ultimately becomes a practitioner. No one ever becomes a practitioner by deciding this is what he would like to be. There's only one way in which a person becomes a successful practitioner, and that is by practicing. Again, the moment an erroneous picture presents itself to your eyes or your ears, no matter what the picture is, you must make the adjustment within your consciousness. That is what is meant by praying without ceasing. You do not wait for someone to call and say, "I am sick." At every appearance of discord, you must, here it is again, begin your treatment, whether you are asked for help or not. You say, "Well, is this not a mental activity?" Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because you can't make the leap into Christ consciousness. You can't say, "Well, I understand now that Christ consciousness meets everything with a smile." I mean, I've seen students do that and they fail. So I'll just step outside now, and when I see that car wreck, I'll just smile. It's an illusion. Walk by on the other side, and there's no healings taking place. You may convince yourself that you're practicing these principles, but you're not. You have to go through the same steps. When I learned to play the guitar, I had to look at the strings, and I had to look in the book, and I had to put my fingers down, and I had to press on them hard, and it hurt. My fingers were not, they hadn't developed the calluses yet. And it sounded twangy and not really, really good, really nice. And eventually, through practice, because I love music, I learned to change chords very, very rapidly without making a sound. until I strum the next chord. And without thinking, without taking any thought, I could play a whole song and just smile. There was no thought involved, almost like the fingers know where to go by themselves. I'm observing them changing chords. It's the same way with someone that plays the piano. First they have to go through the scales, and it's so boring. When are we ever going to play some songs? And then one day, Tchaikovsky, Bach, Beethoven, Strauss, beautiful music comes out. So we have to start within ourselves practicing the principles mentally. Now we're focused completely on spiritual healing and the art of spiritual healing and the two-pronged approach. We have to know that there is no power in error. The error is illusion, and no illusion is ever externalized. Therefore, it's a mental image. And then we have to drop it and rest back in the truth that God is. And God is ising. And that involves a mental activity to remember all that. Because I guarantee you, when you turn on the news, and, well, I don't know who the newscasters are nowadays. I started way back with Walter Cronkite. Anyway, when you turn on the news and you watch the broadcaster and he's telling you these horrible stories or the latest politics about Obamacare or the situations in Iraq and Iran and Korea and all over Afghanistan, you have to begin this mental activity. You cannot pass by on the other side. If you don't do it, you will remain in barrenness. Now, that's what he says. But there is hope. And the hope is that because you love music, in a month or two or three, you will be playing beautiful music. And because you love God, in a month or two or six, you will be demonstrating God. And so that's what he says. He says, every time an erroneous picture strikes up against your consciousness, you make the correction within yourself and then go on about your business. Eventually, the practice brings about a change in your consciousness. Yes, that's the name of this book, Consciousness Transformed, and we want a transformation in consciousness. Now, what is it that we're supposed to know? What is the correction we're supposed to do? Well, if you've read the chapters on One Power, most of the healing principles were given at depth in 1959, so any of the material from 1959, such as The Art of Spiritual Healing, Spiritual Healing Principles of the Infinite Way, The Foundation of Mysticism, Realization of Oneness, that book is great, 1959 Letters, anything from there will give you the principles that you are to be knowing. Now, we'll review a little of it before we're done, but let's continue. So, every time an erroneous picture strikes up against your consciousness, you make the correction within yourself and then go on about your business. Eventually, this practice brings about a change in your consciousness. In your human consciousness, you are living a certain pattern, not once seeing anything erroneous in your surroundings. On the spiritual path, as you continue your study, erroneous conditions are shocking. He says, I guess it's like the mathematician who's shocked when he sees 2 times 2 equals 5. He says, because you are abiding in the truth and inwardly spending so much time learning and thinking truth, now that's the other side of the equation of the two-pronged approach. You're knowing the truth about God. There's no truth about man, the human. There's only truth about God appearing as. So he says, because you're spending so much time doing that and learning about it, the moment an untruth strikes your consciousness, it's as though it actually hit you. You are aware that some little thing is wrong, and suddenly now it ruffles your consciousness. That is your call to make the adjustment within. When you feel that, that's your call. Time to make the adjustment. What adjustment? I don't know how to make an adjustment. Then you'd better go back and read the 1959 material. You thought you could skip it. Just read over it briefly. He says, in a lot of places, students do not like to study the nature of error. Oh, they love the nature of God. It's beautiful. God is perfect, harmonious, complete, abundant, loving, eternal, immortal. Oh, it's beautiful. And prayer is the ability to rest and receive impartations from that being within. Beautiful. And now let's look at the nature of error. Oh, man, who wants to do that? So I'll just read it, and okay, yeah, I get it. It's not there. It's an illusion. Blah, blah. And so I skip it. And I wonder, why do I read these books and I feel so spiritual and I put them down and I'm so barren? It's because you have a conscious contact with the book. You don't have one with the God. And you're barren because of the barrier is still in the way. And the barrier is the belief in two powers, because you haven't done this translation within yourself. You haven't paid the price. And the price is the work. And the work is the translation within yourself. So, when it ruffles your consciousness and you know something's wrong, that is your call to make the adjustment within. As you witness an accident, you realize there's only spiritual government, and nothing ever falls out of spiritual government. You witness theft or drunkenness, and you make the translation. You begin to retranslate appearances in this manner. You developed the higher consciousness. This is how you develop it. You're not just suddenly born into Christ consciousness. You can't just suddenly wake up one morning and play a concerto on the piano. Or classical music on the piano, you just can't do it. You have to go through the exercises. This is how you develop your musical ability, to be able to smile at the audience and have your hands on the piano and not even looking at the piano, and up and down, tickling the keys. Maybe your thing is jazz and you're playing really beautiful jazz. This is what I know. I know that you cannot play. I could not play the guitar until I practiced the chords. And it was work, and I didn't like the work. I wanted to play the music. But my love of music drove me on. People say you can't grow unless you're in pain, that pain is the touchstone of growth. I'm telling you that's a lie. Yes, it is true sometimes pain can be the touchstone of growth, but you do not have to carry that touchstone around. It can be a one-time thing. After that, you can grow out of love. I learned how to play music because I love music, not because I was in pain to play it. I learned how to practice some principles, remembering God, practicing the presence because I love God. In the beginning, the very first time, it was because I was in pain. After that, it was because I love God, and I found out you can grow just as much out of love as you can out of pain. And so if you want to have this Christ consciousness, this ability to meet error with a smile because you love God and these principles, then practice. Okay? Don't skip it. It's not going to work. So this, in this manner, he says, you develop the higher consciousness, and then every appearance that touches you is translated within you without your having a conscious thought. Now, you can't just jump to this place in consciousness, to this higher consciousness. You can't just be born into it. You develop it through the practice. Those who go into the healing practice too soon have to give so many treatments. Yes, it's a very mental activity. Had they waited, knowing the truth would have become so automatic that the moment an error touched their consciousness, it would be adjusted automatically. You see? Now, this, when I read this the first time, it brought to my memory, all those that hear my voice will come out of the graves. How does that fit with this? Well, in the beginning, you're in the grave, the tomb of mental activity. And you're translating this image that is appearing to you mentally. But each time you translate the appearance mentally, you should get to the place where you rest. Each experience of translating should get to the place where you rest. And this is how you develop the higher consciousness, so that you get to the place where you can meet it with a smile, because you're already resting in that consciousness. Now look, here in this book, The Foundation of Mysticism, Spiritual Healing Principles of the Infinite Way, there's a chapter called One Power. And it says, you are the determining factor in your life's experience because you can reject that which you do not wish to demonstrate. And it is only difficult in the first few weeks or months of practice, if one practices faithfully. In other words, every time a suggestion of any kind tries to come into your mind as an erroneous condition, circumstance, or influence, it is only necessary to remind yourself there is only one power, there is only one law, there is only one life, there is only one substance, there is only one cause, and then rest in that word. You see? Your dominion, he says, lies in your ability to reject whatever erroneous thought, condition, or appearance comes to you, and then rest. That's the two-pronged approach. First, there's the mental activity of looking at this and reminding yourself, and whatever words work for you. In his case, he likes, there's only one power, one law, one life, one substance, one cause. This that is appearing is an arm of flesh, nothingness. And then rest in that word. So the first part of the exercise is knowing the truth mentally. The second part is knowing it to where you come to the end of mentally knowing it. And then resting. And all of that can take place in 30 seconds or a minute. And eventually it takes place with a smile. But you must go back. If you don't know what it is, how it is you're supposed to translate this appearance of error, then you better go back and read about impersonalization and nothingization. And it's beautifully expressed in the book Realization of Oneness. And it's also in here, The Foundation of Mysticism. Make sure you pay attention to the chapters called One Power. Now, in The Art of Spiritual Healing, which we read last week, there is also a chapter, chapter 3, called One Power. And so you see, you can review these chapters called One Power to find the principles that you are to practice, the mental part, the mental activity that leads you to a mental stillness in which you rest. Now, we read this last week, but we'll read it again. Here in this chapter called What Did Hinder You in the book The Art of Spiritual Healing. And by the way, if you look in the front of this book, let's see, I believe you're going to see copyright 1959. Why? Because in 1959 it was revealed to Joel that the students were not understanding these principles, the healing principles. They weren't getting it. I think he asked a question or two, and based on their answers, or based on the questions they were continuing to ask him, he saw, oh, wow, they're not getting this. And so he made it his business in 1959 to travel the entire world and give talks on the spiritual healing principles. And so you'll find these books, if you go back and look, these talks from which these books were made come from 1959. All right. So it says in the chapter, What Did Hinder You? In spiritual healing, whether the claim is Jones, Brown, or Smith, whether it's cancer, tuberculosis, or polio, whether it's unemployment, depression, or unhappy relationships, do not be tricked into treating persons or conditions. See, there is the principle of impersonalization. Leave the persons alone. Get back to the substanceless substance to which you can give any name you like. This is the principle of impersonalization. You can call it the carnal mind, you can call it hypnotism, suggestion, it can be anything, as long as you interpret it as meaning nothingness, and you know that it has no substance, no law, and no cause. So there's some work you have to do right there. You have to study this principle of impersonalization, and you have to practice it when error hits your awareness. You have to practice impersonalization. And whatever you impersonalize it as, whatever term you like, whether it's hypnotism, suggestion, mesmerism, world mind, images, universal thought, you must interpret it as meaning nothingness. So that when you say, ah, mental image, or when you say, oh, appearance, or illusion, it can't be just a word. It has to carry with it the meaning that it has no substance, no law, and no cause. Because that's the second part. Impersonalization and nothingization. So there are the two principles right there that he tried to teach in 1959. And he says, when you really begin to comprehend that in healing you are not dealing with people, when you learn to eliminate them and their claims from your thought, oh, would you please, well, okay, you're walking down the street and there's somebody kicking their dog. Now, you have to impersonalize, well, what is, how does he put it here? You have to eliminate that person and the claim. You have to eliminate the person and the person doing the beating and the one being beat. And in every instance, deal with the root of the problem. What is the root of the problem? If you don't understand what the root of the problem is, you haven't studied what should have been studied before you got to this book called Consciousness Transformed. You should have studied the material from 1959, and if you don't know it, go back until you do know it, and then come back to this. Okay? So he's assuming that you understand these principles. When you really begin to comprehend that in healing you are not dealing with people, when you learn to eliminate them and their specific claims from your thought, and in every instance deal with the root of the problem, carnal mind, arm of flesh, nothingness. That's impersonal, and it's nothingness. Then you will find how quickly you will be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence within you. See the two parts. The mental activity of knowing this is impersonal nothingness, whatever terms work for you. You've got to find the terms that make you go, oh yeah, that's right. And rest. And rest in this word. When you're able to do this honestly, you'll find, he says, how quickly you'll be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence within you. He says, this presence cannot be felt until you are free of the barrier. And the barrier to feeling this presence is the belief in two powers. The barrier is the belief in something apart from God. If you prefer, the word temptation can be used in place of hypnotism. Now he says, the carnal mind, if you're using that term, is not the opposite of a divine mind. See, you're not going back to two. If you're using the word carnal mind, it must mean nothingness, or arm of flesh, nothingness. The minute you have made the carnal mind nothingness, you no longer have two powers, and you can do just what it says in Scripture, rest in His Word. You can rest in this Word, waiting for the Spirit of God to be upon you, and when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism. Okay, so the principles are that what you're looking at there, that picture, the man kicking the dog, is hypnotizing you. Your immediate felt in your emotions is, oh, that poor dog. Oh, that evil man. How could he? What is wrong? Okay, and all the criticisms and judgments, that's personalizing. Now you've got God and this evil man. You've got God and this poor dog. You're personalizing. We all do it. It's habit. But we've got to learn a new habit. We've got to meet this. Every single one that we see that we can remember, we have to meet it. We have to retranslate it into an impersonal nothingness. Whatever terms work for you, if you do not understand how you can see that that way, go back and study the material from 1959. Okay? Until you get it. Because the barrier is the belief in two. Two powers. So go back and study the chapters on one power. Study the foundation of mysticism, the art of spiritual healing, realization of oneness, the 1959 letters. Listen to the tapes. I bought all the tapes I could find by Joel Goldsmith on impersonalization and nothingization. All of them. Every one. I bought them all. Now, once you do have this ability mentally to go, oh, wait a minute, I'm being fooled again. This is a mental image. It's not out there. No illusion is ever externalized. I learned that in the 1959 material and in the Parenthesis in Eternity, in that wonderful chapter, Reality and Illusion, I learned that no illusion is ever externalized. So this is something being presented within me. It's world mind presenting a picture. But is there any substance to world mind? No. God didn't make it. And what God didn't make was not made. So this that I'm seeing was not made. Yes, I know I'm seeing it. I'm seeing a mental image just like I see a dream at night. Doesn't make it real. It might be scary, but it's not real. Okay, so this is impersonal. It doesn't belong to anybody. There's no person here. I can eliminate them and the claim. It's impersonal. It's nothingness. There's nothing behind it. No substance behind it. So now I can rest. And yes, the barrier is removed. And I feel this movement, this presence. Ah, okay, part two. I can rest in the word, in the presence. You will see how quickly you will be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence. You will wait for the Spirit of God to be upon you, and when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism that has you looking at this and feeling, oh, that poor dog, oh, that evil man, how could he? Why, the very, that hypnotism, it breaks that hypnotism, and you're, oh yes, okay, God is. And you look again, and you may find that the man is making up with the dog. You may find that in the days and weeks to follow, the man's nature has changed. He goes and he gets help. But that's not the point. That's the added thing. You're not doing this for that. You're doing this so that you can attain freedom from hypnotism, freedom from mental activity, and that space, that place, that silence where you rest in the word and feel the presence. You see? I love this so much, I'm going to read it again. I know I read it last week, but I can't hear it enough. For years, after I had learned to recognize all forms of sin, disease, lack, limitation, depression, or whatnot, or hypnotism, the puzzle was to discover how to break it. What could I do? It was then that I discovered the scriptural passage, which you will find in all my writings. The stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. Oh, isn't that beautiful? That's so beautiful. It takes it right out of your hands. It's not the truth, you know. It's not your mental activity. And yet your mental activity is needed to reach a place where your mental activity stops. Because it's only by your mental activity that you can see, oh yes, it's an impersonal thing, substance, and it's a nothingness. There's nothing behind it. It's only by that mental activity that you can go, ah, okay, I'm resting here. Now speak, Father. And then you become aware, consciously aware of a spiritual presence within you. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon you, and it breaks the hypnotism. There's a stone is cut out of the mountain without hands. The hypnotism is broken without mental activity. Isn't this not beautiful? This is so beautiful. This is the most beautiful way in the world that I know of for healing to take place. It's wonderful because you have nothing to do with it. You stand there as a beholder, as a witness. You bear witness. And it's great. You can't take any credit. Somebody calls you and says, oh, thank you. What a wonderful healing. And you know you had nothing to do with that. It was your wrestling. The only part you played was wrestling around until you finally let go and attained the silence. And yet the wrestling was necessary for Jacob, wasn't it? And it's necessary for us, too. So he says, the weapon against error, our offense and defense, is something that is not physical nor mental. Now realize this. In your meditation, in your one-minute meditation, as you're walking down the street and you're required, you cannot pass by on the other side, you have to translate this picture. It is something that is not physical or mental. Inside yourself, there's going to be something that's no action, no word, no thought, only the awareness of God. But to get to that place, you need the words and the thoughts in the beginning. You will get to the place, he says, where you are able to just simply smile and the thing is translated within you. So he says, when you carry this out in practice and you watch the stone being formed in and of your consciousness while you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder, eventually a state of peace will come and then you will catch a glimpse of God as is. Not a power over anything, just God is. And all problems fade out in proportion as you develop this ability to be still, to behold, to witness divine harmony unfold. It's just so beautiful. I can hardly stand it. This is the whole kernel of spiritual healing. It took me 30 years to uncover it, to uncover this thing, so that I could understand it and practice it. So, getting back to the end of this chapter here. He says, those who go into the healing practice too soon, they have to give so many treatments. Why? Because they're still at the part where they're practicing the scales, aren't they? They're involved in the mental activity part. But had they waited and continued to practice that mental activity part until it became as automatic as fingers falling on a keyboard without looking, had they waited, knowing the truth would have become so automatic that the moment an error touched their consciousness, it would be adjusted automatically. You see, he says, in the experience of practitioners, mental activity lessens and lessens, and eventually the practitioners are hardly even aware of the errors around them, yet the adjustment is made within them. It becomes automatic. Eventually, practitioners do not even see or hear the errors that are brought to their attention. They just smile, and the adjustment takes place. Yes, yes, you remember the lady? She pressed through the throng. She touched the hem of his robe. That means that she just touched the edge of his consciousness, his conscious awareness. And since he was already resting in the Word all of the time, he had gone through the scales. He had gone through the mental activities. Trust me, he did. He reached the place where awareness, well, he was living the awareness. He was living Christ consciousness, the awareness of the presence. And so when she pressed through and he became aware of her, that is, she touched that Christ consciousness, then the issue of blood was healed instantly. He hadn't even been aware of her. It was just met, just by a smile. But you can't do this overnight. You can't say, okay, this is great, I love this, I understand this, now I'm going to meet it with a smile. And go out there and see that accident on the corner and say to yourself, well, this is impersonal nothingness, and smile and walk by. Nothing will change. You don't have the consciousness of it. You're not resting in that Christ consciousness, and you're not beholding and witnessing Christ consciousness dissolving a mental image. No, you're just doing it with the mental activity, and you haven't found the second part yet. But you will, if you practice, you will. He promises it. Eventually, practitioners do not even see or hear the errors. They just smile, and the adjustment takes place. Start out as a student, aware of discords. Make the mental adjustment. It's mental. By what has been called treatment, or knowing the truth. After you have seen enough in harmonies and have known the truth, eventually the correction is made automatically. That is what happens in the life of a spiritual student who starts out as a human being with a human mind. Knowing the truth in the books and absorbing it day in and day out. Gradually, he becomes aware of discords in the form of sins, diseases, lacks, inequalities, and injustices of the world. And they bother him, they annoy him. And he learns to retranslate them immediately in his thought. It's a mental activity. He never voices it openly or outwardly. As the student studies and practices, it filters back through the mind into his consciousness, and eventually he does not have to speak or think it. He just has to be it. Now remember, in Beyond Words and Thoughts, the student is never really in Christ consciousness until he ascends up over the mind. The ascension is always the same. Ascending up over knowing the truth to being the truth. You remember that? And you know these are advanced classes for advancing students, and he's trying to lift us into the mystical life, into mysticism from metaphysics. Well, you don't jump over it. And you don't skip. I'm going to skip metaphysics because I don't like them. You have to go through them. You have to use them. And then you ascend. And so he says, eventually, through the practice, each time you see it, you know the truth mentally, and then you rest. It becomes quicker and quicker until you become that state of rest. And eventually you don't have to speak it or think it. He just has to be it. Eventually you reach the place where you are not consciously declaring truth, and yet the moment an error strikes your consciousness, the adjustment is made. He said that, what, 7 or 8 times now? Because it happened to him and to those that had the courage to practice. Now, as you are called upon for help, you have very little conscious treating to do and very little knowing of the truth. You know, I used to wonder, how? Because I would read where he said, well, when I was in practice, I would meet 300 cases of flu in one day. And I would think, what? 300? What? How do you do that? Because it takes me 15 minutes when I get a call. 300 times 15, uh-uh. That's not going to work. How do you do that? I couldn't get it. I didn't understand. I assumed he was telling me the truth. He wasn't lying. He was meeting 300 cases a day. How? And then I'd read a little farther, and I'd see where somebody would call and say, I have this problem. Will you help me? Yes, I will. And hang up. It'd ring again. He'd pick it up. I'm here for you. He'd hang up and pick it up again. Okay. Leave it with me and hang up and pick it up again. I will work for you, hang it up and pick it up again. And I began to see something's going on here different than I'm doing. It takes me half an hour to know the truth on one case. My dog, or my wife, or my son, or my daughter, or my parents. It takes me half an hour. My job. What the heck? How do you do 300? He's doing something different. And so I studied and studied. I don't know how it is for you. I want to know. I study. I work. I dig. I mine for this gold. I underline. I circle. I highlight. I cross-reference. I go back and listen again. I hear it again and again. I meditate. I ask God for light. I ask Joel to explain it. And sometimes he comes to me in dreams and does exactly that. Sometimes I feel an impression in meditation. The point is that it's work. Okay? And so I realized, and that's why I'm telling you, eventually, you reach the place where you are not consciously declaring truth, and yet the moment an error strikes your consciousness, it's met. The adjustment is made. Now, if you're called upon for help, you have very little conscious treating to do and very little knowing of the truth. Why? Because you are being the truth. Finally, he says, you can just look out at error and make the adjustment with no effort whatsoever. I love this. I love this so much. For years, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, we've been knowing the truth with effort, only so we could reach the effortless way, also known as the infinite way. He says, at first you are mentally active in reversing the appearances and knowing the truth, but eventually you do attain an actual consciousness that may not even see the error or be aware of it, and yet your being there heals and corrects it. There actually does come a time in your life when you are not consciously aware of the discords around you, and yet healings are taking place. Isn't that wonderful? Is that not beautiful? But to get there, we have to go through the center. We can't go around. I must say this to you. You do not enter the spiritual life, he says, until you rise to that place where the conscious knowing of the truth has been subdued, and you have actually attained the awareness. In other words, you are the truth. You are now not knowing the truth, At this point, you have become the truth. And here is where, in our work, the act of practice begins. I do not like to see students going into the healing practice too soon because it's too much of a mental effort in the beginning. And it's too time-consuming. Now, that's exactly what I was just talking about. When students are patient, however, abiding within themselves at the center of their being until they are called upon, they will never have to go through the affirming, denying phase and knowing of the truth phase. They will just smile, and the work will be done. And that doesn't mean you don't have to go through that. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you do go through this, until you reach a place where you don't have to know it, your consciousness is meeting it with a smile, then, he says, the work will be done with just a smile. You won't have to know it anymore. In other words, they have patiently abided. See, they've worked with the principles until they know that all sin, disease, and death are illusions. Eventually, realization dawns. In spite of appearances, God constitutes individual being. When students fail to take advantage of every opportunity to reverse appearances within themselves, they lose the opportunity to become good practitioners. That is, practitioners who do not have to give treatments anymore. It is only by the conscious reversal that all of a sudden realization dawns God constitutes the life of man. When students fail to do this for a long enough period, they will not be successful practitioners. No, they will be barren. We started out with that. So he says students should not go into the practice until they have arrived at the consciousness where they no longer have sick or sinning patients, but where they realize the spiritual nature of the universe. Now, this is a spiritual universe. That's one of his favorite sayings. I read it all over the place in all of his books. This is a spiritual universe, especially in fact that's the name of the chapter in The Thunderous Silence, isn't it, where he talks about his baggage. He's looking for baggage in a spiritual universe. So he's going to summarize here. In the beginning, you are accepting appearances at face value, and so you must know some truth consciously. As you continue to work that way, and if you are alert and aware, you will reach that place where you immediately correct the error as soon as it strikes your consciousness, and then drop it. So you're still doing a mental activity, but then you're dropping it. You've got two parts now. You're doing a mental activity enough so that you can see its impersonal nothingness, and then you drop it and you rest. That's what you're practicing. That would be like the second degree. Eventually, you reach the place where you do not even see the appearances, but they are corrected. Less and less error is coming to your attention, and more error is being healed by touching your consciousness. The healing takes place automatically. When humanhood touches up against the purity of that consciousness, which is no longer condemning or judging, well, that is what heals, reforms, or corrects. So you see, that would be the third degree. There is not a single one of you listening to this talk who is not at the stage where when you see or hear any form of error or evil, you cannot realize within yourself it is not of God and drop it. So everybody that's an advancing student that has come to hear these talks is at least at the second degree and not at the first degree. That is assuming the three degrees that he talks about. Okay? This is the way you ensure that you are developing the healing consciousness. You are giving recognition to the fact that everyone in his true identity is a child of God, and your recognition of that is what sets him free. All right, so that would be part one of the two-pronged approach, knowing the truth mentally And part two is resting in the word. What word? The word I. The word God. The word is. And so these last couple of pages of this chapter are going to be exactly that. So he's changing topics here. And he says, last Sunday the title of our talk was I as Consciousness. And close your eyes and very gently within yourself say, I. 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 That I is God. You may actually think it is man because you were taught that it is man. And because you were taught it is man, you lost your demonstration. That I is God. As long as you think that I is human, well, then your life will unfold as the opposites. You'll experience sickness or health, lack or abundance. But the moment you begin to live in the realization that I is God, then it will unfold always as peace, joy, success, abundance, health, and harmony. But remember, this is not just a mental exercise. It's not you saying to yourself, okay, there's no man here. That's an impersonal nothingness. I is here. That's not enough. That's the start of the two-pronged approach. Then you must take the second step and rest until you feel the movement of that I. Then it will unfold as peace, joy, success, abundance, health, and harmony. Those are the added things to having the consciousness. But, he says, never forget that the minute you voice this, if you go out and tell your friends this, the minute you tell anyone, make up your mind, it will take you another 10 years to get back to where you are. And I think maybe I experienced that about 20 years ago. You say, but Joel, you're voicing it. Yes, but there's a difference. I'm not voicing it to you. I'm voicing it to myself. You see, he has the consciousness where he looks and sees one. Anyway, keep it secret. He says, from now on, normally and naturally, assuming you're going to do what he revealed this week, you should have more spiritual experiences than you ever have had in your life. And when you do, keep them secret. Keep them sacred, and they will multiply. Let them bear fruit. When others ask about the fruit, what are you doing? How come? Give them the books. Give them the talks. But don't give them your experiences. I was told years and years and years ago to only share spiritual experiences that I'm having at the moment with my teacher. And so I tell you the same thing. When you share them with the teacher will handle them like what they are, beautiful jewels, pearls. And he will look at your pearl and say, yes, that's beautiful, and hand it back to you, instead of trampling them under feet. At this moment, having not practiced this yet, you cannot possibly imagine what a tremendous experience or influence you are going to be in your family, business, profession, community, and eventually the world, as you commence to abide in the truth that I is God. The moment you can feel this, you will understand the revelation of Christ Jesus. I have meat to eat that ye know not of. It is I. Be not afraid. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Every time one of these passages comes to your attention and you realize, this I is God, this I is my bread, meat, wine, and water, well, you break the whole attachment to this world. You see? I have overcome the world. How? By this two-pronged approach. So he says, recognize the I of your being is God, and obey the primal principle of mysticism, which is secrecy. Always remember never to reveal this secret except in teaching. And even then, be sure that you are teaching, those you are teaching are not seeking the secret for the loaves and the fishes. Reveal it only if you are sure that they are seeking the secret of life and are willing that the other things be the added things. If the secret is functioning in your consciousness, it produces fruitage. It produces fruitage. And the moment you reveal it, it's as if you tore up the earth and allowed the seed to disintegrate. Only you can ruin your demonstration by outwardly sharing what you have no right to share. So share the milk with the young students, but then let them prepare themselves. Never hesitate to urge the students to study. But keep the secret of the mystical life to yourself. Keep your experiences to yourself. Teach the principles, share the books, the talks, the tapes, but please remember this. As you now come into spiritual experiences, you are only having the experiences because of your years of devotion. Always remember, there are no shortcuts for your relatives or your friends. And so secrecy is a spiritual principle, an actual substance that holds within itself your experience. Bury your experience in the principle of secrecy and just let the fruitage appear outwardly. I is consciousness. I is God. Consciousness is I. Consciousness is your real identity. Now go and tell no man that the I of you is God. And so this week, the class was all about spiritual healing principles. Making the adjustment, the translation within yourself as a mental activity, and then remembering the second part and resting in the Word until you bear witness and behold the I of you flowing, ising, being. That is what melts the mental image. And we call that a healing. Practice this, and as you come into the awareness of this I of you, the infinite I, the eternal I, the Christ I, as you become aware of it, and you move to that place of less and less mental activity, and closer to the place where you simply rest as a witness to this consciousness, and watching air hit this consciousness and melting, do not share with others who are not ready what you are doing. Number one, they won't understand because they haven't come up through the principles. And number two, he said it'll be like uncovering a seed and exposing it to the elements and destroying it, disintegrating it. No, let it grow until you reach the place, as he says over and over and over, eventually you will, where translation takes place automatically with no effort on your part. You are simply moving and watching and watching and moving. And Christ liveth my life. You will come into that experience where Christ lives your life. And that is the purpose for these talks. There are three of them left. We have the two covenants, and then we have spiritual discernment, and finally, an eternal relationship. And then perhaps we'll do a review, and we'll call it a complete series. Okay? God bless you. I love you. Practice, practice, practice. And if you have any questions, feel free to write. I will do my best to answer. Otherwise, let us travel this road of happy destiny together, and yet as one. Thank you.